It's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and welcome to our review of Ant-Man and the Wasp. All right, so now that you guys are hyped up for this movie, please help me in welcoming, I could not do this alone, our resident movie guy, Mr. Dan Rockwood.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to get into this movie. It was a blast to go see.
It was. And from Reborn and Remembered, our once sister show, Mr. Ian Bates.
Yo, yo, yo. Glad to be back on the show. I, too, had a blast with this film. I haven't had this much fun at the theater and in a long time, so I'm excited to dive deep into this one.
So this is this is an episode where we're going to be experimenting with a brand new format, and this brand new format that I have to introduce to you guys is an icebreaker question. So,
okay.
So this film deals with, like, inter-realm travel. And so I got an interdimensional question for you guys.
Okay.
Okay. What one... If you had one problem that Mr. Meeseeks from Rick and Morty could fix, what would it be?
I'm Mr. Meeseeks! Look at me!
Be. Ian.
Oh, man. You had to... ask this, because I'll be completely honest, I have never seen an episode of Rick and Morty. So
all right.
I'm kind of drawing a blank on this one. Yeah, my bad.
So Rick makes this box that you can snap a button in, and this figure named Mr. Meeseeks appears, and he has to help you solve one problem, one mission. And then he just disappears.
Okay. Mm.
So, I'll let you think of that. Superfan Dan can go, though.
So, you know, I can forgive Ian for not watching Rick and Morty. I myself just got into it recently, so I definitely haven't been following it for a long, long time. But I have become a recent big fan. So, Mr. Meeseeks, if he could solve any problem. For me, it might just be... just cleaning the house, like just make it so it's just always clean. I don't know if that's something that would be within his powers, but I waste so much time on dishes and laundry and vacuuming, and I wish I wouldn't have to do that ever. But that's a pretty ongoing problem. I think if there was just any one big issue that he could solve for me and then disappear forever, that's a tough one. Maybe just like he could build me like a super fuel efficient futuristic car that never breaks down and I would never need to spend money on maintenance. That would be a huge, huge savings for me and super convenience. And I would definitely benefit from that for a long time.
That's a good one.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
That's a good one. I would have thought of something else, then you would have gone somewhere else, but it's a good one. Ian, you got one yet?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I don't know exactly the extent of Mr. Meeseeks' powers, so I'm going to kind of lowball it here, and this is just something that me and the guys I live with, I live with three other guys in a house outside of Richmond, and we have the kitchen sink, we have one of the garbage disposals, and it has been broken, and we just need to fix it, and we just haven't gotten around to fixing it for like a year almost, I think. And so whenever we run the dishwasher, the water backs up in the sink, and I don't know, part of it's laziness, part of it's I just don't think we want to spend the money So if Mr. Meeseeks could fix the sink and the garbage disposal for us, that's probably exactly what I would use him for. So
that's fair.
I definitely respect that. I wouldn't even know where to begin if my garbage disposal stopped working. So
yeah, right.
I definitely respect that. I definitely relate to in Parks and Recreation when Aziz Ansari, he says, you know, in my last apartment, my fridge stopped working. I didn't know what to do. I just moved. And that's pretty much where I'm at in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair.
I'll pull a Tom Haverford on that one as well. So. Heck yeah.
I'm just going to move. I would actually, so one of the biggest uphill battles that we've had for the last year is fundraising to get the status to nonprofit.
Okay.
I would just use Meeseeks to finally get nonprofit established for getting mental health resources into schools. And it's one less battle I got to face, you know?
Wow, that's way better than mine. Can I change mine? I go with that. I'll go with that one too.
can we gift Mr. Meeseeks? Like, we'll just gift him to you.
Yeah. Like my wish would be totally useless. I just want to give him to someone who knows what they're doing, and you know that'll be my contribution to society.
I would. I don't know how personal you want to get. So if you want to edit that, if you want me to edit this out, I can. So. Mine that I would give to you for Mr. Meeseeks, for those of you guys that don't know, Dan actually just got recently engaged. And planning a wedding is extremely stressful. I would use Mr. Meeseeks to give you and your woman the perfect wedding.
Aw, that's so sweet.
That would be incredible because, you know, we're just, it's been a little over a week now. And I thought we would have time, and we're planning on taking our time, and, you know, that part has been low stress. But just in 1 week, the amount of conversations and decisions that have popped up that I've never even considered, it is a lot. It is quite a bit. And this is coming from someone who, you know, sunk 170 hours into Breath of the Wild. And this is just, like, so overwhelming compared to that. Maybe not as overwhelming as like The Witcher 3, but still pretty overwhelming. But super exciting and super fun. So I think Mr. Meeseeks would definitely be a huge resource there. And he would throw just like the best wedding too. Like that'd be so cool. So supportive, so much fun. That would definitely be a good resource for him.
Yes. All right. So good resource. Two is this film right here. And this film opens up another realm of the MCU. We're talking, of course, of Ant-Man and the Wasp. But before we get to it, just two things. If you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, feel free to reach out. You guys can leave someone, tag someone in the comments, message us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You guys can go to victimsandvillains.com/hope for resources. You guys can also call the Suicide Lifeline. It's 1-800-273-8255. Are also text anonymously to 741-741. But suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that will take place each and every day. And for every successful one of those suicides, 25 more being attempted. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, again, we encourage you guys to reach out. And the second thing I want to say is from this point on, if you guys have not seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, spoilers abound right here. So hit pause, go to your local cinema, go support Marvel, and come back, hit play, and join us for this conversation.
On July 6th.
Let's go.
She seems more intense.
Suit up.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Teaming up
and get down.
Uh-oh. If only Cap could see you now. So cranky.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. This...
So I was super excited for this movie because Ant-Man was such a delight when the first movie came out. It was just so surprising to me, having not read the comics. All I knew about Ant-Man's powers was his ability to shrink and communicate with ants, and that's all I knew about it. And so I was actually rooting for an Ant-Man movie long before there was any official announcement that Ant-Man was going to officially enter the MCU. So I was extremely excited, so happy with Paul Rudd's casting, so happy with the story. It was so much fun. So with the sequel coming up, I was also exciting. People who have, you know, if you've listened to me on the show before, you know I tend to avoid trailers. So I went in, I hadn't seen a single trailer. No clue what the plot was going to be, no idea what was going on, and I was just delighted right away. And what I found surprising was how much of the movie focused on the interpersonal relationships, specifically between Scott Lang and his daughter Cassie. That was something that I didn't necessarily expect. I thought it was going to be another, maybe like a Captain America-style movie where you have a singular villain, and it would be pretty cut and dry. But this... just the number of characters that were in this movie that were so memorable, from the FBI agent that kept checking in on him, to his ex-wife and her husband, to, of course, Hank and Hope. And it was just so much fun and exploring more of the quantum realm. And there were a lot of, you know, unanswered questions from the first movie that I think this movie was able to tackle. So overall, honestly, like as a standalone movie, really good. I'd probably give it an 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10. As a sequel and really just kind of ramping things up, definitely, you know, a 9 out of 10 type of movie. There, I did miss kind of the classic villain type, I guess you could say, because this movie didn't necessarily have that. It was more of like a Deadpool 2 type of situation. It kind of reminded me of that similar... where it's like, oh, you know, we have a villain, but, you know, not in the traditional sense. So definitely really enjoyable, though. And if you haven't had a chance to see it, definitely check it out. It was just a super fun time at the movies.
Yeah, that's very true. So disclaimer, I guess I need to get this out of the way. I don't know if they're my favorite actors, but I have a man crush on Paul Rudd and an actual crush on Evangeline Lilly. And I have
that
for ages, both of them, before either one of them were involved in Ant-Man. I grew up watching Lost. I grew up watching movies with Paul Rudd. And so when, like you said, when they first announced Ant-Man, I was like, oh, you know, I was reading into it. Didn't really know if they're going to go Hank Pym, Scott Lang, like what they were going to do. And then the rumor came out that, you know, it was going to be Paul Rudd. And I was like, no way they're going to cast Paul Rudd. And then that happened. So I was like, yes. And then, you know, they announced Evangeline Lilly as Hope, which I didn't really know who Hope was initially. But we got there and, you know, 3 years later, fast forward to this movie and, yeah, kind of echoing what Dan said, it was a very family tied oriented movie. It wasn't even you know, wasn't just one family. You had Hope and Hank and Janet, and then you had Scott and Cassie and his ex-wife and her fiance, and you had the villain Ghost and Bill, and it was all just very family oriented, and that was just a good feeling. And I kind of like that it wasn't a traditional villain this go round. I think, you know, we had Killmonger and Thanos, and they felt very human. I think kind of the same with Ghost in this as well. I know last year, some of the film's villains didn't really have that. I can identify with this villain. I empathy, that sort of thing. And I say every single villain that we've had this for the three movies that Marvel's released this year, we've had empathy for them. And I think that's a step in the right direction on Marvel's part. So, yeah. Most anticipated film of the year. Definitely probably my favorite film I've seen this year as well. So yeah, 8.5, 9 out of 10 for me as well.
I think it really speaks a lot from the studio point of view that, you know, you had Infinity War launch in late April. This is the first MCU film following that. And the fact that they want it to be an Ant-Man movie, I think, speaks volumes not only about their confidence in these stories, but also, to me, it's almost they want to take a step back. Like, look, we've been to outer space now. Thanos has invaded. These massive, larger-than-life stories have happened. Let's scale things back and get kind of back to the beginning and to the roots of Marvel with these family-style types of stories. And I'm really happy that this movie did that, and that it also explained why Ant-Man was not in Infinity War, which really kind of upset me when I went to see the movie. And the big part of me expected that. You know, I didn't think every single Avenger, especially in a two-part film, was not going to be in the first part. But I loved Ant-Man so much, and they just sort of, you know, one comment almost wrote him off. And I wish he had been in there. But now this movie, it makes sense to me in the greater scheme of things why he was remaining at home, or, you know, making the FBI think he was at home. You know, I'm really happy that that they went with this movie, and that it shows just why Marvel continues to be successful, because they can take these incredible characters, these amazing powers, these larger than life stories, and then they can really scale it back to just, you know, those really deep interpersonal relationships. As a rule, I'm not generally a fan of children in movies. I think the first Jurassic Park movie would be infinitely better if the children just weren't there. You know, and, but, you know, that being said, I understand, you know, Dr. Grant, he needs to understand and learn about kids, and that's why they're there, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I'm definitely appreciating their roles more. But so Cassie, who was played by Abby Ryder Fortson, so she was just phenomenal in this movie. Like, I loved her character. I loved how that actress played it. It was so well done. The writing was so well done. And so it was really cool. And I think, like, Paul Rudd just comes off as just, like, a genuine, like, good dad. Like, that definitely helped me feel just a lot for those characters. And I wanted to see that family be successful. And I could feel those stakes and the risk of him going back to prison. That was really stressful for me. And I really wanted to see them be able to be successful.
Like you guys were saying, like the sense of family that exists in this. But I felt like at the same time, I would have. So I did a little bit of research into like Ghost as a villain in like the her comics, and like her is actually a him in this. And but like the thing that I was really anticipating and seeing with her character was that she has almost a sense of like a Joker element to her, to where she's like really unpredictable. And I kind of really wanted to see that. And I felt like she kind of was underutilized. And then I just felt like Walter Goggins' character, Sonny, kind of overstayed his welcome. Every time he kind of came on the screen, he was just kind of annoying to me. And I wanted to punch him in the face, unfortunately. But I just, I, like, the action sequences in this were great. Wasp definitely stole the show. And I love the sense of family and camaraderie. But the way that they handled some of the villains in this, I felt like just could have been done a little bit differently. And I feel like that was kind of my biggest kind of gripe about it, was just the handling of the villains, especially Ghost, because Ghost I felt like was such a missed opportunity. But visually speaking, every time she was on the screen, you just can't help but look, because her like movement, you know, transcending between the realms was just absolutely gorgeous and phenomenal.
I think I definitely agree with that. And that's interesting. You know, I, having not read the comics, I really had nothing to kind of base this off of. So I kind of like when these villains are more ambiguous, because she has, I mean, she's just trying to stay alive, right? So are we going to fault her for trying to get what she needs, even if it's at the expense of other people? I think, you know, it made me feel better seeing that our heroes in the end, and Lawrence Fishburne's character, well, also, you know, they they all want to help, but not go to the lengths necessarily that she was willing to go to. So, but from a visual standpoint, I've never really seen anything like that of someone like phasing kind of in and out of reality. And so that was just really incredible to see. And I like that, that this movie, you know, did such a good job with it.
No, I get what you're saying, Josh. I think I agree that they could have done more with Ghost, and your point, which I think that they probably will, the way it ended. I think we'll see Ghost and Bill Foster again. Your point with Walton Goggins wanting to punch him in the face, I think that's exactly what he was there for.
He was just like, I just didn't understand like the appeal of why his character, because to me, I make the argument for this film that I made for Justice League. The Justice League had characters in it that were underutilized, but characters that were overutilized. Same with Last Jedi, where you had plot points that should have been minimized and plot points that should have been maximized. So for this one, I feel like Goggins' character could have been nothing more than a cameo, because his first initial like screen moment moved the plot forward, but I felt like just his like continuous on screen I just feel like his continuous on screen presence kind of added this like unneeded tension to the screen that you could have used to put that towards Ghost, in my opinion. So,
fair enough.
I can definitely appreciate that. Yeah.
I try to have logical conclusions. Anyways, the source material is I'm not too like on the source material as far as comics go. Dan is not either, but Mr. Ian Bates is, and so we're gonna give him a second to shine, and he's gonna talk about the legacy and the comics. So take it away.
Okie doke. Yeah. I won't try to rant too much. I just kind of want to get the overarching theme of Ant-Man and the Wasp. And keeping with the theme of the most recent film, I got to say it's family. I'd say for Marvel, outside of the Fantastic Four, Ant-Man and the Wasp are the two characters that have the most focus on family and Marvel. So Hank Pym was one of Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's earliest creations. He made his first appearance in Tales to Astonish number 27 back in 1962. And it wasn't too far after that in Tales to Astonish 44 in 1963 that Wasp, Janet Van Dyne, made her first appearance. And then they were kind of the couple superhero group for the early 60s for Marvel Comics. And then and not too far along after that, same year, 1963, you had the Avengers. And that's the original lineup was Ant-Man and the Wasp, Iron Man, Thor, and the Incredible Hulk. And it wasn't until issue 4 when Captain America returned from ice. But interesting enough, a lot of people don't realize this. Janet actually gave the name the Avengers to the group. There wasn't anything really special about it. They were just kind of in the middle of a battle, and somebody, may have been a Thor, said, hey, you know, we need a name for the group. And she just pulls, hey, well, why don't we just call ourselves the Avengers? And they're like, yeah, that sounds great. And that was kind of it, cut and dry. But, yeah, so that they were on the team, off the team a lot. You know, the team changed a lot over the years and is still kind of changing. There was a good story arc in the 70s that most fans are familiar with, and it was actually an abusive kind of story arc where Hank was abusing Janet, She was still the Wasp. I think at that point in time, he was Yellow Jacket. So, you know, as with most families, they have their ups and downs. But Bill Foster, he kind of plays into the mix. He showed up in the Avengers in the 70s. He started off just as a scientist as well. And he was the second Giant Man after Hank became Yellow Jacket. And I believe right around that time in the 70s, Scott Lang became Ant-Man. And Scott, it was very similar to the film, how he got the suit. He stole it from Hank to save something or do a heist or something like that. And Hank was so impressed that he let him continue to be Ant-Man. Bill Foster was also the fourth Goliath. I'm not sure where he is currently in the comics. But another interesting side note, Clint Barton was the second Goliath. And Clint, as many of you know, is Hawkeye. So he was Goliath for a little while in the comics. And then moving on to Hope Pym. Hope Pym is actually a comic book character, not in the very familiar sense. She is actually in an alternate future timeline called the MC2 universe, and she was a villain called the Red Queen. Very similar power set to the Wasp. She made her debut in A Next, number 7, in 1999. She never had the name Hope Van Dyne. It was just Hope Pym, but that's where they got the character idea for Hope in the films. And then a few years, actually it was just 2 years ago, so after Ant-Man had already come out in theaters, they revealed the new Wasp. I'm not entirely sure if her comic is still ongoing. I know that for a little while that she had her own book. She was in the Avengers on more of the recent titles, and her name was Nadia. She was Nadia Pym. She was the unknown daughter to Hank Pym and his first wife, who was a Russian. And Hank, at this point in time, strangely enough, has kind of fused with Ultron. Because in the comics, he created Ultron, unlike the film, you know, the MCU, where Tony created Ultron. He's fused with Ultron. He's more or less dead as Hank Pym. His body's still out there. His mind is still just kind of trapped. And he's like half Ultron, half Hank. So he's kind of a villain that's just sitting, biding time. I'm sure we'll see him more in the comics recently. But Nadia shows up. She was actually raised in the Red Room, which is the same place where Natasha Romanoff was trained to be Black Widow. She's still fairly young. She gets her U.S. citizenship, and the only person that she really can find is Janet. And Janet is still semi the Wasp as well. She carries the mantle. She kind of also bequeaths the title to Nadia, and Nadia has to pick her name to be a U.S. citizen, and she just decides to pick Van Dyne. So she's Nadia Van Dyne because Hank's not around, and Janet kind of believed in her. So the interesting thing with all these characters, at least for me, is that even from the get-go, it was always about family, and the family gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you're interested in Ant-Man and the Wasp, if you really like the movie, I'd say check out it's a fairly new series. I think only 2 issues have been released so far. It's called Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's on shelves right now. Mark Waid is writing it, and I've read the first issue. It's really, really good. It's part of Marvel's Fresh Start initiative, and it stars Scott Lang and Nadia Van Dyne as Ant-Man and the Wasp. And It's a perfect introduction point if you're looking for something new, and it deals a lot with the quantum realm. So, you know, there was a lot of that in this film, and there's a lot of that in the comics. I think it's billed as a 6-issue miniseries, but there's a possibility that it's just going to keep going. So, yeah, it's kind of all over the place, but if you didn't know, Ant-Man and the Wasp were founding Avengers, and I was early on in the MCU. I think I was anticipating them to be in the Avengers, and I think the original plan was to have them show up in that first film. They kind of wanted to honor the legacy of the original Avengers, but it didn't work out that way, and I think the MCU has been better for it. I think we got a lot of good development over the years since they weren't in the Avengers. So, yeah, that's a lot of information. but that is the family theme, the legacy of Ant-Man and the Wasp, and it's still continuing to this day. So that's what I got for you.
I had no idea they were so critical in the founding of the Avengers in those early years in the comics. That's really interesting. That's cool. It makes me want to check out the comics more. And I like that you mentioned that comic series, because that's my issue, is comics have been around for so many decades, and I just don't know where to begin in a lot of cases. So that sounds like a good place for someone like me to start to get into it.
Heck yeah. Absolutely. It's a good book. If Mark Waid's done everything under the sun, he's done Avengers, but I
think
Kingdom Come, heck yeah, Kingdom Come for DC. I think he does great big stories, but sometimes the smaller, pun intended, smaller stories, sometimes he shines most under those. So give it a whirl. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, well, here we're going to take a short commercial break. Don't go anywhere, and we'll be back after these messages.
We are actually jumping into Wasp, the character as a whole, who we're introduced to. Hope Van Dyne had the screen time in the last one, but she was kind of the trainer, so to say, for Scott Lang. And this one, she really becomes a partner, really steps up. And since the events of both Civil War and the first Ant-Man, she's kind of been increasing and becoming this hero or vigilante, however you want to call it. But she had a fantastic introduction that we got to see. So she goes and meets Sunny, and it's the same scene where we meet Ghost for the first time. And oh my goodness, like, her fight choreography in the opening scene was just phenomenal. Like, the kitchen scenes with her and the salt shaker and the knives, like, just one of the best sequences in this film. And even towards the end, she has another fantastic shine-out sequence where she's jumping through cars in downtown L.A. traffic and just kicking butt. And it's amazing to see. So, Ian, since you got a big crush on her, I'll start with you. What did you think of how they handled Wasp?
Yeah. I think my anticipation was 100% secure. You know, it was the same director, same writing team for the most part, I think. So after the first one, after the first Ant-Man, I was like, all there. I'm glad they didn't force it. You know, we all kind of had that inkling that she was going to come back and be the Wasp, and then in the post-credit scene, she more or less, they confirmed that. She even had the classic Janet Van Dyne haircut in the first film. And then, you know, we get to this one, and like you said, that first scene, she just, I mean, It was intense. You know, she walked in there 100% sure of herself to meet with Sunny, and you know, it was perfect. You know, people are making a big deal, and rightfully so, that this is the first film in the MCU to have a title with a female character. And so we're starting to see that push for gender equality, I suppose. I don't think the MCU has ever really had a problem with gender equality with the characters, but you know, Iron Man, Captain America, Incredible Hulk, Black Panther, it's all male characters. And so this was a triumph to finally have a female in the title. And, you know, we have these other great female characters in the MCU. We've got Black Widow, Scarlet Witch, Valkyrie, Gamora, the list goes on. But the Wasp, just based on the comics, she was such an important founding member of the Marvel universe as we know it. To finally have her on screen and to be played by an actress that just is that role. So confident, so, you know, fierce. It's what I've wanted for a long, long time in a Marvel female character. And that's not an alien or an Asgardian. And, you know, we get Hope. We got Evangeline Lilly as Hope. And couldn't have asked for more with that. But also, which I know we'll probably talk about this in a little while, I'm not going to go super deep into this, to have Michelle Pfeiffer as her mother, and just seeing her on screen, you know, in the beginning, the flashback sequence, seeing her de-aged, it just, the first thing that popped in my mind was Catwoman from Batman Returns.
Yes.
And I'm like, she was a monster of a character in that film, in a good way. Just, like, captured the screen, almost took the spotlight away from both Danny DeVito and Michael Keaton. And I just felt it was a great comparison for me. I felt that Evangeline as Hope and the Wasp did the same with Hank and Scott as Michelle Pfeiffer did as Catwoman in Batman Returns. So fantastic.
And that's actually another great point that I'm glad you brought up, the de-aging, the opening sequence of this, that really deepens the appreciation that I had for the visualization of this film, especially when he goes back to the quantum realm. I just, again, this film is just so beautifully stunning. But Dan, what did you think of the way that they entered and they handled the Wasp character?
I felt they handled extremely well. So, you know, Evangeline Lilly's, first of all, you know, as mentioned, that first fight scene that she has, I would give that 3 fire emojis easily. Just so phenomenal, so cool. And that was, there are moments in movies when I literally just start like smiling against my will. I think in Solo, it was the Kessel Run. It was, you know, in the first Matrix movie, it's definitely the lobby scene. And in this movie, it was really that first big, you know, opening fight scene number. So that was just so cool. I loved, like you mentioned, Michelle Pfeiffer as Janet Van Dyne. She was so phenomenal. And, you know, she's a famous actress. I'm not as familiar with a lot of her work. I've actually, like, I'm really not familiar with the older Batman movies. Definitely not as familiar as you guys. There are some that I've never seen. And, you know, the ones that I have seen, they've maybe, I've only watched once many, many years ago. So that's something that I definitely want to revisit because I do own them all. I just haven't watched them in a long time. But I really loved the Wasp in general. It was so cool seeing her Just jump into action. There was never really a moment where it felt like she needed to be saved. She was always taking care of herself and just kicking butt and just leading, Scott through all of these different crazy interactions. And the fact that she's been working alongside Hank for months and months now, trying to procure all of these different devices that she needs for the quantum tunnel to be able to find their mom, her mom. It's just so cool to see, you know, the independence, and we do get a lot of that in the first Ant-Man movie. And Ian, I like that you say that this is the first Marvel MCU movie with a female in the title. That's not something that I realized. And I think that it definitely shows that Marvel's kind of heading in the right direction. I remember reading that for Iron Man 3, the character of the botanist that is working alongside the Mandarin, she was more or less supposed to be the main villain. But at the time, this movie didn't come out all that long ago. Unfortunately, Marvel was not confident that a female villain would be well received. And I'm thankful to say that audiences have proven them wrong, and now they're getting much more diverse. And I think the success of Black Panther says a lot about the kinds of stories they can tell, and they're really branching out with the different characters that are relatable to more people. And I'm always going to be in support of that. There's, you know, no universe, fictional or otherwise, where that's a bad thing. I also really love Evangeline Lilly as an actress. I love her. I loved her in Lost. I loved her as the Wasp, and seeing her just kick all kinds of butt in this movie, it was just so cool and so much fun. And seeing that she's really her own character. She's not just a love interest. She's not two-dimensional. She has her own motivations and beliefs, and the movie does a really good job, and the writing does a really good job of showing her as this, you know, unique, powerful, strong person who is not someone to be messed with.
And to your point about the botanist being the villain for Iron Man 3, Hela was actually supposed to be the villain for Dark World.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
That was the same thing that they kind of had not envisioned, this character being something that they could relate to, or they didn't think that there was going to be a lot of support. To me, I think that I felt like Dark World probably could have benefited from a Hela villain, especially you could have stayed a little bit more true to the comics with Infinity War, but that's beside the point. I definitely liked the appeal of bringing Wasp. I thought that she, her, and I think one thing that, like, Ian, when you're talking about the comics, the way that they played off each other, you could definitely see that chemistry here between the two of them. And I think that was something that I really liked, because, you know, you talked about the older Batman films, including the relationship between Batman and Robin, and you haven't seen anything like that on the big screen probably since, well, Batman Robin,
yeah,
from, you know, late 90s. And this is the first time that we're getting a true partner camaraderie, that you're playing well off each other. And I feel like that's another thing that I really liked about their character dynamic and their relationship, was that they just played so extremely well off each other and got along. And they definitely felt like a mainstream modern day take on, you know, Batman or Robin or something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I never felt this. I felt like, you know, some people may have had this with the progression and the progressiveness of the MCU, what they're hitting at this point. Like, that could have easily just have been called the Wasp and Ant-Man. Sometimes I feel like, you know, Batman and Robin, you know, oh, Batman's central and Robin is a sidekick. Or, you know, some people may have thought Ant-Man is central and the Wasp is his sidekick. And it definitely wasn't that, which is exactly what it needed to be. So this is super refreshing on that front. But yeah, I agree. I can't think of anything since Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, where we've had that partnership in film. And that's been, you know, over 20 years since that. So yeah, this just gives me hope for the future of the MCU. I know Evangeline and Tessa Thompson, who played Valkyrie, and some of the other female actresses have been really voicing for an all-female Avengers film, which I think would be incredible. There's a team in the comics called the A-Force, and it's like Wasp, She-Hulk, all of them. So we could see something like that in the very near future, and I would be all for that.
That'd be incredible. And, you know, after this was, I believe this was MCU number 20 now, film mm-hmm. number 20. And the fact that it's been 10 years and 20 movies and they're still getting it right, it's just impressive. We're witnessing something here and now that I don't think anyone has ever seen before, and I'm not sure we're ever going to see it again. Yeah. It's really just a perfect storm of cinematic mastery that we're witnessing with the MCU, and I'm just so happy to be alive to witness it and get to enjoy all of these movies as they come out.
I think one thing that this film also does really well is handling the scientific aspect of it. And so when we're talking about what topics we really wanted to approach, Dan, you had talked about you wanted to touch on the way that they handled kind of like these sci-fi elements of science and trying to explain the quantum realm, but also they ground it in such a way that you could look at something like Bill Foster's knowledge or Hank Pym's and see this in something like a modern science journal, and this would be a real thing. So I'm going to let you kick it off, and let's see where this baby goes.
Absolutely. Well, I'll say I was a little surprised at the way they showed the quantum realm in this film, because when they were discussing it in the first Ant-Man movie, Hank, I believe, describes it as a place where you are shrinking infinitely and time and space kind of cease to exist. And when we actually get down there and when we're reunited with Janet, we see that that's not necessarily the case. She was still able to communicate and get messages out, and she was able to survive in a way. She became acquainted with the quantum realm as if it were like a desert island, and she was just marooned there and learned to survive and learned to adapt, which to me, the first movie made it sound like that's not what the quantum realm would allow you to do. But at the same time, no one talking about it had been to the quantum realm at that point. So I accept that, you know, they wouldn't have all the correct information there. But I love when movies comment on their own ridiculousness. And I think Scott definitely does that when, you know, they're talking about the quantum realm and the quantum tunnel and everything. And he says, you can't just put quantum in front of every word and have it make sense. That's not how science works. And I'm not even going to begin to pretend to understand quantum physics and everything that surrounds it. But to me, a movie doesn't have to be scientifically accurate, but it does need to create a set of rules and then follow those rules. That's why I don't have a problem that there is fire and explosions in space in Star Wars, and why there are sounds in space in Star Wars. That was set up in the first Star Wars film, and every film since has gone along with that. I'm fine with that. I have more of an issue with like the new Star Trek movies, where in very early on in one of the first scenes in Star Trek back in 2009, there's an explosion and all of the sound gets cut out and it's just quiet. And it was so well done, and I remember being so enthralled with that. And then we get to Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond, and we're hearing explosions now in space, and we're seeing these things happen, and you're going against the rules that you created. So just don't do that, filmmakers. Stop. But with Ant-Man and the Wasp, I liked that, you know, they had this idea of the quantum realm from the comics. It's been fleshed out for many years, so I think they knew how they wanted to go about it. And I liked that that it's this whole, literally this whole new world. The way I view the new MCU movies now, it's similar to how I view the new Star Wars movies, and that's that, good or bad, it is expanding that universe and showing us more of that world and more of those characters, and I think that's a good thing. I don't think that that would ever be bad. And so the fact that, you know, the quantum realm is something that exists, something that Captain America has never heard of, something that Tony Stark may have theorized about at one point, but something that, you know, is really, it's Paul Rudd's character is intimately familiar with it. Hank is familiar with it. Janet and Hope, they're all, you know, familiar with it. So I like that this movie touches on that, that it shows that they are able to go in and out. The fact that if you don't have the right technology or don't have the people on the other side, you can get trapped there. And I can't help but wonder if this might be a way to defeat Thanos, if the quantum realm is going to be involved in some way. I think we'll have to wait and see. But I love that it's this whole other world, because we're in outer space with Guardians of the Galaxy. We're on Earth with all these other heroes. The quantum realm is so unique to Ant-Man that I would really love to see it expanded out maybe in the next Avengers movie. I think we'll have to wait and see. But I love that it exists in the way that it does.
So in the comics, in Infinity Gauntlet, and we talked about this previously. If you guys haven't checked out our episode, we'll have links in the descriptions below. But there is a spot. So when they introduce and they're giving backstory to the Adam Warlock character, Adam Warlock, he has this like intimate connection with Thanos, and it's because he lives inside the Soul Stone in this world called Soul World. So my theory of introducing the quantum realm into this is that Ant-Man is going to kind of serve as the Adam Warlock of sorts to kind of connect. And I feel like for some realm in the quantum realm, they're going to state that it's Soul World. Soul World is somehow going to exist in the quantum realm. That's why at the end of Infinity War, after he snaps his fingers, that he goes and visits little Gamora. That's why it's all orange. It's because it's a lot of people believe that that is Soul World.
Mm-hmm.
That exists in the MCU. So I'm anxious. I think it's interesting that they're using the Ant-Man and the Wasp, the one of two films, to really kind of fill the gaps between these two big Avengers films. And introducing the Quantum Realm, perfect platform to introduce Soul World. Just saying.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you there, Josh. It was funny, Dan, you mentioned, and I could almost see, I don't know if they'll go this route, but if they're actually can get trapped there, what better way to put somebody where you don't want them to ever get out, a la the Phantom Zone and the DCU. I could see some similarities there for sure. Yeah. So we'll see.
I think the quantum realm might be a big piece, and if not the quantum realm, I think the mirror dimension from Doctor Strange. I think either one of those could be good opportunities for trapping Thanos and keeping him away.
I think, too, there's also, I read this article on comic book resources about the possibility of Captain Marvel also existing in the quantum realm, because Captain Marvel is supposed to be set in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. So where has Captain Marvel been for the past 30 years? Like, is she in space?
Yeah.
Is she in another realm? A lot of people theorize that introducing the quantum realm with Ant-Man and the Wasp also could be where they are also having Captain Marvel until Avengers 4.
Yeah, that's interesting. Also, I don't know if either of you guys ever saw this, but this reminded me when you mentioned the mirror realm and Doctor Strange at the very, not the very beginning of the film, but when he is first, you know, tapped on the forehead by the Ancient One, and he goes traveling through all these different dimensions. The director of that film confirmed that one of those dimensions was indeed the quantum realm.
I did not realize that. Yep. That's really cool. So if that's something, if Doctor Strange is able to get into that realm, I don't know. That opens up a lot of possibilities. I'm really excited to see where they go with this.
Yep, me too. I mean, I was thinking, you know, with the ending of this film, with Scott being trapped there, I'm questioning how in the world is he going to get out of this? And I'm thinking, oh, Doctor Strange. And then I'm like, no, because he's gone. But there is a sorcerer who we are not confirmed what happened to him. Wong is still possibly around. I don't know. I'm probably thinking way too much into this, but it's a possibility.
No, I think, you know, and that's the beauty of this, is there's so many possibilities. And I just want to say, as heart-wrenching as the ending of Infinity War was, I do wish they had taken some time to show you the secondary characters and show them drift away, because that would be, to me, much more heartbreaking if we saw Pepper Potts float, if we saw Happy, if we saw Natalie Portman's character from Thor, or Kat Dennings, or Eric, all of those characters, all the secondary characters. That would have been more heart-wrenching to me, because in a lot of ways they have an innocence that our main heroes don't have, and to see them have to pay the price, that would just be really heartbreaking to me. And I've heard that they released a list of secondary characters who have died from Thanos. Now, I have not looked at that list. A part of me doesn't really want to know, because I'm guessing they'll, you know, get to it when the next movie comes, and I would just as soon just wait and see how it plays out there. But it's, to have Ant-Man and the Wasp be really the first movie where we see some of those secondary characters become victims to Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet, that is, it's absolutely heart-wrenching, and it reminds us, after what was, you know, a pretty fun, happy, family-fueled movie, we start to see, oh yeah, the universe is kind of ending, and half of everybody is being destroyed, and that's not something that you can run from in this world. It affects everybody.
Yeah, it does. And just like depression can definitely affect everyone, and suicide as well. One thing that we've talked to you about here a lot tonight is the fact of family and community, because you look at Scott Lang. So Scott Lang has this kind of hero community that he has with, you know, being an Avenger, but he also has this community between Hope and Hank, but he also has his ex-buddies with the ex-con business as well. And there's just a lot that not only, and also, you know, his family. So you have, he has these three groups of people that are around him that just, no matter how bad he's going through, because, you know, he's gone through this 2 years of home arrest, and he's going through just this difficult season with, you know, Ghost and the added anxiety of him balancing between, you know, maybe going to prison, maybe not going to prison, which the giant man misdirection towards the end of the film, one of the best scenes in the whole thing.
Definitely agree.
Misdirection. But it's so crucial to have family and community through adversity and through troubled times, and that's one thing that this film definitely demonstrates. And we're shifting to the portion of our show called Roads to Hope, and this is the point where we talk about mental health or an application of the film that we can walk away with. And I feel like being able to talk to someone during a tough season or having family and friends that surround you. I feel like it is something that is really crucial. Dan, when we had you, we did Pacific Rim Uprising. Family was another big thing we had talked about, and this film just kind of continues that same theme.
It absolutely does, and not just family, but I love the ex-con business they set up, because that is notoriously, especially in the United States, incredibly difficult to find a job and find just a stable lifestyle after getting out of prison. And I like that this movie definitely comments on that and tries to find ways to deal with it. And I think it's important to realize that it's difficult when you're an ex-con, but it's difficult when you're depressed or when you're dealing with suicidal thoughts or when you're dealing with finances, if you were let go from a job or have trouble finding a job. There's so many different kind of external factors that can just multiply your internal feelings. And I think there's, you know, maybe I'm extrapolating a lot on this movie, but I think that it does a good job of showing just how difficult it can be, but and the fact that there are people, in this case, it's Scott and his ex-con buddies who have been there, who understand, and who have been able to kind of pull themselves out of those situations and are there, then they're there willing to turn around and help other people out. And I think just like they do for ex-cons, it's up to all of us to do for people struggling with suicide, struggling with depression, struggling with all of those internal issues, those voices in your brain that just won't quiet down no matter what you do or how hard you try. And it can be incredibly difficult, sometimes feeling like it's impossible to step out into a happier pasture when there's literally something, you know, in your head just saying you're not good enough, or you deserve the bad things that happen, or it could be any number of things. I'm just pulling from experience some of the things that, you know, I hear on a daily basis. And it's having a group that understands, or an individual who understands, it's something. I think the first step is acknowledging and realizing that it's really not your fault, and you're not just a product of these bad things that have happened to you. There is opportunity to kind of pull yourself out of that. And I think, you know, deep down, Ant-Man and the Wasp, it's just about that. It's about acknowledging that, yeah, bad things have happened. Scott did break the law. He did go to prison. But he's paying for those. And as he's paying for them, he's making the absolute best of his time with his daughter. We see that in one of the very first scenes where he makes all the tunnels out of cardboard boxes and the ants, and the escape tunnel he makes with the cardboard roller coaster, which I absolutely want to try.
Yes.
You know, eventually, I don't know where I'm going to get that much cardboard, but when I do, it's definitely going to happen. So, you know, I love that these movies on the surface, they're enjoyable, they're fun, they deal with a lot of these more serious issues. And I think that if you're able to walk away with a smile on your face and realize that, you know, there's a level of understanding out there for you, regardless of what you're dealing with, I think it definitely kind of sets up the conversation to go in the right direction. And Ant-Man and the Wasp definitely gets that done.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't have a whole lot to add to that, because that was beautiful, Dan, and very true. But I will say, I felt the most for Hank and Hope, and I think just her name being Hope is kind of like a beacon to the overarching story from Ant-Man and the Wasp. Like, look at, I just think there's some beautiful imagery. You know, in the first film, they expounded upon a little bit in this one, Hank loses Janet. Like, she sacrifices herself for the greater good. And I feel that Hank was probably, you know, depressed and had anxiety for forever after that. Like, you know, he and Hope weren't close. he kind of shut down after that happened. But hope was always there. And Scott, of course, was an integral part in this, but it's just, it's a great image to have, you know, Scott and Hope. They have each other's back, you know, at the end where he passes out and Giant Man, like, she saves him. They all kind of work together to save Janet. And that's the way we, as human beings, you know, need to live with each other. It doesn't matter who it is. The stranger, the beggar on the sidewalk, like, anybody and everybody, your own family, the people that you don't get along with as well, and your family or your coworkers, you don't know what they're going through. And that was honestly one of the takeaways from Ant-Man and the Wasp. Scott was a convict. He stole an Ant-Man suit from Hank in the first film. And if he hadn't have done that, then they would have never gotten Janet back. So it's all full circle. Take care of each other.
I think that Ian and I, we met about a year ago, and what brought us together was this podcast and suicide prevention and pop culture and a lot of these things. But the more that we got to know each other, this sense of community through adversity really was able to kind of take part into our relationship, because, you know, we were keeping each other accountable on certain things, certain areas of our lives, and it really impacted my life for that season. And, you know, I never would have had that had I not had someone like that. And, you know, now our seasons have shifted, and, you know, now we have different people in our lives for those different things. But, you know, just alone, it really showcases the impact of what one conversation or what one text message can go through. And I love the fact that that Dan brought up that scene in the beginning where, you know, he's kind of going through this ant, the ants, cannot remember, like, it's just like this ant palace, this like indoor theme park. And, you know, he mentions to the FBI agent, you know, you try entertaining a 10-year-old. And, you know, just the lengths that he goes through for family, like, they've definitely taken the best of this bad situation and made the best for it. Even the reason that he's in that situation was because of family. You know, he cut that deal so where he could be with his family, so that he could be around the people he loves. And I feel like even that message speaks volumes to the truth of the importance that family is, the importance that community is. And even when bad times show up at your door, it's like, all right, stand firm, because I have this person, I have my mom, my dad, my wife, my best friend, so on and so forth.
I think it reminds me a lot of the lengths that family will go to take care of you if it's a strong unit and if it's a healthy relationship. I remember, you know, all the things growing up that my dad did for me, taking me places, taking me on vacations, driving me places when I had no other means to go. And my mom working insane hours, working lots of overtime every week just so that we could be able to take vacations when we wanted and have what we needed and live a comfortable lifestyle. We did not have really a lot of money growing up, but it never felt that way because my mom just dealt with all of that behind the scenes. And so as a kid, it's not something you really noticed. You just, your needs were met. And that was good. That was a happy lifestyle. And so it's, you know, seeing, how Scott is with his daughter and how she's his priority and how they have that conversation later in the movie about, you know, if I'm off saving people, I'm not here for you. And she basically has to tell him, look, like, other people need you too. I understand that you need to go. And I love when they discover that news report of him down by the pier, and he's giant, and she's just smiling at the TV because she's so happy that her dad's out there being a superhero. Those are some of my favorite moments in the film, and you know, I don't like using the term the greater good just because Hot Fuzz has ruined that for me. you know, I get the moment anyone ever says it's for the greater good, it's like, oh no, okay, they're going to turn into a murderous neighborhood watch association. So just watch out for that. But it's cool seeing the sacrifices that are made in this movie for the ones you love and how that ultimately makes their family stronger and is able to help them pull closer together. I think that's really cool.
That's actually going to do it for us. So what did you guys think of Ant-Man and the Wasp? You guys let us know. Leave us a comment below. Tweet to us on Victims and Villains. And again, if you guys need going through a difficult time right now, need some family, need some community, you guys feel free to reach out to us. All our social media we will be given in just a few minutes. But Dan's presence is pretty much just existing on our show at this point.
That is absolutely true. You know, there are thoughts and ideas in the works of starting up my own podcast or starting up a blog or something that you guys can reach out to. But yeah, if you want to get in touch with me, feel free to reach out to Josh, reach out on social media. You can find me on social media, just Dan Rockwood. Pretty easy to find. But this is pretty much where my online presence is right now. So thank you guys so much for listening. And it's always a blast to come on here with you, Josh, and you, Ian, the first time that I've been talking with you. But it's been so much fun. And I'm looking forward to coming on in the future and doing more movies, which just a quick side note, AMC recently released their AMC A-List package. You can see three movies a week. I'm in no way promoting AMC here, but I'm just saying I signed up for it because I do see a lot of movies, and to see if I would get my money's worth, I went through and wrote down every movie that would be coming out between now and December, and there are a lot more than I thought there would be. So, and more than a few AAA titles, A-list titles. So I'm very excited for all the movies that are coming out throughout the rest of 2018, for what we're going to see in 2019, and coming back on here and discussing the really, really awesome, amazing ones. So thank you, Josh, again for having me on. I'm looking forward to coming back on again in the future.
We love serving as the premier spot. Exclusive online spot for Dan Rockwood. Ian, where can people find you online, my friend?
Yeah, y'all can find me online. You can find me on Twitter at Joker Bates. And you can find me on Instagram at Ian Bates 93. I don't have a huge Twitter presence, but I do a lot. You know, with the comic book community and the MCU community on that. And I'm also, in my spare time, I write novels and short stories, nothing published yet. I'm hoping to change that very soon. And I am also hoping to upload my first short story. I'll probably do it on Facebook or Twitter, put a link on Twitter or something. In the next few months. So that's something to look forward to. If you're interested, give me a follow on there. And kind of like Dan was saying, I'm sure I'll be back. You can count I'll be back for the next episode that involves Ant-Man and the Wasp. So heck yeah. Thanks for having me, Josh.
All right. No problem. And you guys will also be... we'll also be doing reviews of Ian's short stories as they come out. So,
heck yeah.
You guys, if you guys like what you guys hear, make sure that you guys leave us a 5-star written review on iTunes. Like, follow, and subscribe to us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else. And please stay out of anything out of the back of a van. See you guys next time.